Welcome to the GMBM podcast with me, Martin Ashton. And this week, we are joined by EWS superstar. I'm going to build you up now. World champion, World Cup champion, and mum, Tracy Mosley. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, bit of history coming out there.
I did quite well there. I couldn't remember how many World Cups. It's a lot.
I couldn't tell you either, to be honest.
No, but how many World Cup titles? You must be able to remember that. Two World Cup downhills.
And then a World Championships, which was separate for downhill, obviously.
Just a World Championships.
Then three EWS overalls.
And do you want to know what I think is the best thing about your EWS titles? Is that you were racing Anne-Caroline Chausson.
Yes.
That's pretty special.
It was pretty cool.
That's very, very special.
And it was the first 3 years of it, so I think it was like the new discipline as well. It was really quite cool. It evolved so much in just that short space.
What a person to say you beat and beat and beat.
I know, considering she beat me and beat me and beat me when I was racing downhill, so yeah.
So good. I think she's one of my favourite mountain bike riders ever.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it's something about like where she just come in and it just changed.
Yeah. And like for me, I've never really been, people always ask you, who's your hero in the sport, who do you look up to? And I've never really been that kind of person, but she is the one person with a mountain bike and I've always kind of looked up to. I think because when I first started racing, she was the only girl that was really like doing big jumps and looking stylish and looking cool. Yeah. And I was like, wow, I want to be like that. So it was pretty awesome.
I remember a cover of a magazine. I don't know which mag it would have been. It wouldn't have been MBUK, but it was back in 1990, probably 1993 or maybe 1992. And it was from World Champs. And she was like doing like a one-handed,
like tabletop thing at MetaBF, maybe?
Maybe MetaBF, yeah.
I think I know exactly.
And like sun chippy clothing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
So good, so good. And she's nice.
She's lovely, yeah. And it was actually quite nice. I think with Enduro, it's less stressed in some ways because you get a whole day or sometimes 2 days of racing. You actually get time to ride with your competitors. You're out for a whole day. Mm. It's actually quite cool to actually hang out with them as well, whereas downhill is very much like that. Everyone's in their own team pit area. You just do your one run. It's quite more of a competitive battle, it feels, whereas Enduro is a bit more of a day out on the bike. So it was actually quite nice to spend that time with her when she was a bit older. Maybe her English was better. We could communicate much better as well.
Her English did used to be terrible. When I was on the same team as her in, we were all on the same team. You would have been on the same...
No, I never was on like the world team. I was on a UK, Volvo Cannondale UK in 98.
Well, you were 99. Definitely riding in 1996.
96 was the first year, actually.
96 was the first year, yeah.
And in 2000, I went to Kona.
We were teammates.
96 to 99,
It's weird, I don't really have any sort of teammate memories.
I've got a good picture of you with a car, Volvo car.
Have you?
Hopping on top of the roof, probably, or something.
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
But weirdly, actually, that says something, doesn't it? Because we were on the same team, and most people I can think of from back in the day, I've got really funny stories for.
Ooh.
Because things probably got a bit loose. But I can't remember any funny stories of you.
I was
because
probably
I
about 15. No, less than that. No, I wasn't quite.
Yeah, you probably weren't even drinking.
No, I definitely was 16-ish, maybe, at that point.
What I'm coming to, keep coming. Which our drinks are just coming in, if you're wondering what's going on. We are actually, we are in it. But just keep coming, Toff.
Oh, you're
keep
already
coming.
In it.
We're already in. That's Tracy's. That's
thank
mine.
You.
Thank you very
you.
Much. Grab a seat, Toff. Yeah, so what I'm thinking, where I'm going is, have you got any crazy stories? You didn't really used to get nuts. You used to win all the races.
Yeah, I've never had a wild side, really, I don't think.
Which is weird for a downhill racer. Most of them, especially the girls, are crazy.
No, I've got more the stories of hanging out with you guys on, like, MBUK trips away and whatever you guys got up to be fair. I was always the spectator.
Yeah,
so, no, I've been pretty dull throughout, really. Just continued that. Yeah.
Right, I'm going to get into some serious questions. What's harder, mum or professional mountain bike rider?
Oh, mum, hands down. There's no question about that. Like, professional racing, I look back at it now and I just think, wow, what a dream. Like,
it's all about yourself.
You're in charge of your own destiny, your own selfish world. You can just do what you want when you want. And the effort you put in is rewarded with the effort you get out. And then it's just easy. Whereas now it's like the world of someone else, a little creature.
Yeah.
Is tugging on heartstrings, tugging on lack of sleep, all sorts. It's just an evolving emotional roller coaster. It's
so Toby's
awesome.
So Toby's four.
Just turned four, yeah.
Is he riding much?
He does. He loves his bike.
Yeah.
He's got a pedal bike now and he's had his balance bike, but he still jumps back on his balance bike and actually he loves doing trials. So you'll be able to relate. just loves his little balance bike, hopping on rocks, jumping on stuff, and just James has been showing him videos of Tony Bow motorbike trials riding.
That's a good person to watch.
So he tries to be Toby Bow, he calls himself, and tries to hop off stuff.
It's not a bad hero to try and.
I'm all about it being fun. So yeah, we haven't done loads. We're not pushing him. He's just comes out for walks with us on his bike and just has fun with it, which is cool.
Crazy. And you definitely think it's harder to be a mum. That's weird, isn't it?
100%.
Isn't it weird you find out how great your parents are? When you become one, you're like, oh, I didn't realise you were amazing.
And you also think, exactly.
Who knew?
All the things you're not grateful for, and actually realise what they've been through. It's like, oh, thanks, mum and dad.
Oh, I don't know.
It's a funny world.
You just said then that you like keeping it fun. Is that something you did in your racing? How would you say? Would you like someone who was keeping it fun or someone who was very serious about it?
I think,
was it like game time?
I think there's been a bit of a spectrum of both of those at times, and I think. And I would say initially I was very win focused. I was driven by being successful, and I think that was because at the time I wouldn't say I enjoyed riding my bike, but I wasn't. Cycling wasn't a passion, it wasn't part of me, and it wasn't my biggest love, in the way. It was just something that I happened to be good at in the early days, and that wanting to win and that drive to be successful was probably the most important thing. And as time's gone on, I've become to appreciate what cycling is, what the sport has given me, brought me, the whole community, and the what you can get from riding a bike and being outside, being the places I've travelled to. All the things that have come with it has made it now become so much more than just about winning bike races. I think that's also when you get older, you appreciate those things more. And the fact that I'm not at that competitive level anymore either, so then you don't have that option to win stuff. You still gotta enjoy it.
I'm intrigued. What do you mean that it wasn't your first love? What does that...
It was more just... I could have taken it or leaving it. I wasn't like out on my bike every day wanting to ride my bike. I just... My brother was the one that was more kind of, I guess, keen and interested. And I used just to go along because he was going to races at the weekend, so very much like he was the one saying, come on Tracy, you should come and ride, you're really good at this, you always ride with us in the week with his friends. But it wasn't like it wasn't my drive, I guess, initially. And I did loads of sports at school, I did loads of music, had loads of other stuff going on in life, so the cycling thing was just something that I went to because my brother was there. It wasn't like me driving it, I would guess. So I think that was probably why. And then definitely I was just super competitive. I think growing up with Ed the whole time, everything we did was a competition, whether it was table tennis, darts, tennis, riding skinnies on the farm, just all sorts of stupid stuff was always like, I've got memories of just fierce competition of battles of dinner time, but we still haven't finished the game. And so I just had that competitiveness, I think. So
it went straight into
the cycling thing. So yeah, I mean, it probably sounds really bad in the sense that, but that's the reality of it. It was him that kind of brought me into it. It took me 2 years to really like want to be going to the races more regularly than just once a year at the Malverns, which it kind of started at. So
it's a great place to have been in that time in mountain biking. That was sort of a little bit of a hub of
our local huge event, really, I guess. So, but now, I mean, for sure, it's completely shifted, and I absolutely love the sport and love the things it's brought to my life, and just the ability just to get out and ride my bike now is like a huge kind of privilege in some ways with busyness of other stuff. So it's crazy how things kind of shift.
And it really is.
I even like riding uphills now, whereas I used to hate that when I was little.
Yeah, but that's because you're on an e-bike.
No, not always.
What's the balance? How often do you ride the e-bike to a normal bike?
It's changed, actually. And I did quite a lot last year. I think when I was getting back from having Toby, then that was an amazing thing. Whilst I was pregnant and also returning to riding, it was really good. And then I think more recently, I've kind of wanted to try and regain that fitness. And I've then been steering away more towards a conventional bike to try and make sure I don't, get lazy. You're still riding your bike. It's not easy, like everyone thinks, but it is different. Mm-hmm. And the old conventional bike still does give you a harder workout. So I do tend to use that more. But then I use the e-bike with Toby to and from nursery. Anytime we're out, him on the Mac ride on the front going for pedals as a family, then
I
use the e-bike because now he's 4 and 20 kilograms. It's a lot to ride a normal bike, so it has its uses in different
ways.
So
amazing you can go out with the kids like that on a bike now.
Wicked. But we did an 8-mile red trail at Sherwood Forest last week, and and drops, and he was just giggling the whole way around. It's such a cool thing to be able to do, and with the e-bikes made that possible. Cool. To be fair, because that would have been hard work before.
So talk us through what your role is now, because you've got a role with Bosch and you've got a role with Trek. Give us some shape to that. What is it you do now?
All
and
sorts.
I really want to get to the bit about how you're supporting you know, the people like Evie and Harry Harden, you know, and how you work with yeah. those guys.
So I guess I've got lots of little strings to my bow. So the Bosch thing is just I've been have a relationship with Bosch as an ambassador to kind of help develop the e-bikes, been doing a little bit of e-bike racing for them, and also just helping kind of educate and shape where that future comes within e-bikes and the cycling industry. I've still got my Timo Racing little kind of grassroots team that both Evie and Hattie kind of came through because they were both from Malvern, from a local kind of local club. And that's still going, but very much it's just giving kids bikes at a discount that they sell at the end of the year with a bit of kit. Very much grassroots, but it's still a really cool, and the kids have done amazing. They're on there.
Done all right.
And then I guess my main role now with Trek is I'm not actually employed now to kind of be a racer by any shape at all. It's just now being involved in the management of their three teams. So the downhill enduro and cross country team are all run in-house by Trek, whereas historically I was on a downhill team. It was run by Martin Whiteley as like an outside company. With the Athertons, it was run by Athertons. So they've now brought all three teams under the kind of roof of Trek.
Right.
And there's seven of us as a group that kind of manage those three teams. And I started off mainly with the enduro team because that's obviously where I transitioned from when I retired in 2015-ish. And then it's kind of evolved into getting more involved in the cross-country team as time's gone on, and still a bit with the enduro. And I came on board to do logistics for the enduro teams, all the flights, accommodations, all that boring stuff when I was pregnant, actually. So it was like a maternity project. So I still do that with the enduro team. I'm also now working closer with the athletes for cross-country. It's almost like a link between Trek as the company and the athlete, that kind of athlete liaison role. To try, and there's always discrepancies. Having been an athlete, you kind of know what an athlete wants, and how having worked within the Trek and the company, there's what they want. So it's trying to find that middle ground and making sure in many ways the communication is working well. And also one of my big things is making sure the team environment's fun, it's successful, but also creating a nice environment, good structure, and everyone's in theory working as happily as they can together in a small group. So that's kind of in a nutshell, but it takes on all sorts of forms really. But
so how much are you involved with sort of, because I mean Hattie and Evie are unbelievably talented riders and they've come through, the common denominator is you. So how do you do that? How do you make, like, that was one of my questions, how do you make the best version of someone's as a rider?
I think Hattie and Evie are just, they're obviously from my local town, so they've come through their local cycling club. And in some ways, I mean, I don't know if there is, that they're very different people as well, very different personalities, very different physiques, very different skill sets. So there's not like, I don't think there's ever one, it's not like a one recipe that's going to work. You know, it has to be different for each one of them. Evie's come very much through the British cycling system and culture.
Yeah.
Was definitely cross country was going to be her thing. Her technical skills were one of her weaker points.
Yeah.
And that's been something she's worked really hard on.
So there's not anymore, for sure.
So there's been a different journey for her. But I think for me from the start, it was just giving the kids an opportunity. So with the cycling club at home, neither Hattie or Evie have parents that were involved in cycling. They knew nothing about mountain biking. They didn't even know really what I did or what I was doing at that time, because I was probably, when they first started riding and racing, I was probably racing EWS to the highest level, but they didn't really follow the sport. They didn't really know what I did or almost who I was, to be fair, which in some ways was actually lovely as well, because there's none of this like expectation by parents or these kids trying to emulate and be this professional rider. They just loved riding their bikes and they were amongst the other group of kids that had the same passion. And there's a couple of lads that in theory could have been amazing cross-country riders but chose to go to uni or whatever. So there was a really amazing core. And I just felt like I was there to create that opportunity. I could see that they were talented. Certainly from the girls' perspective, I've always had more of an interest in the girls because there's few of us racing. So I'm always really encouraging trying to create those numbers and grow the sport for women's side. So I was able to get bikes through Trek UK just on loans. Again, it was like they gave me bikes for them. Some of my old bikes I gave to them when they were the right size. They could fit on my bikes now. Hattie's grown too tall. And it was very just organic, kind of like, here's a bike if you want to come race. Took them out riding. Evie less so because she went into that British cycling program quite early on. But I was always there to advise, help. If ever she needed anything, I was there and still am to a point. But she's definitely had, you know, more involvement with teams and stuff. Whereas Hattie was much more kind of, call it my project, I guess it sounds really bad, but it's more like I took her to enduro races from when she was like 15 and she just followed me around the forest. She just absorbed like a sponge everything. And the skill side came, you know, she enjoyed that kind of like challenge of the enduro and the downhills probably more than Evie did, but she still had an amazing cross-country engine. So I was like, really, really kind of important for me was to make sure that it was fun and you weren't channeling one young child into like, you have to do this one discipline. So my idea was, let's let them experience cross country, a bit of downhill, a bit of enduro, messing around doing trials and messing around in the woods and just it'd be fun.
Yeah.
So that's, there's not really been like a, I guess none of my life's been very well planned. It maybe looks like from the outside, but it's just evolved. And working with those two is just, it's evolved from being local kids that enjoyed riding their bike that it's become and grown into what it has now. And it's amazing. I look back and just think, how on earth did that happen? That was pretty cool.
So do you think the variety of riding is what has got those girls riding so well then? If you've really helped them to look at other types of riding rather than just focus on...
I think what that does as well is it keeps it fun. Yeah. And that's one of the biggest things. You see so many young kids in sport that, you know, they're focusing so early on and specialising in this, and they're doing training sessions every day, and it becomes too much too soon, I think. And even, you know, Evie hasn't had like, you know, this trajectory that was incredible from the start. She had some pretty big ups and downs, and she's spoken quite openly about, you know, eating disorders, stress, you know, fatigue, feeling sick from nerves. There's all sorts of things that has gone through it. So it's not been a, you know, she just took to it and it happened overnight. There's lots of factors that come into it. But for me, making sure that ultimately there's a safe place and a fun place and some good advice from someone who's been there, I think it's been really good. And not feeling like the only way is to have to go down that British cycling route or you have to stick with cross country. Because ultimately, just not just those two, but a lot of girls that I've also helped out and advised, they've come from cross country programme. They've not made it in terms of made that selection because
quite a
small group. And some of them could have just fallen away from the sport. But Ella Connolly in the enduro, I was like, here's an enduro bike, let's go try this. You know, so helped her kind of transition. The same with Martha Gill. So quite a few of those girls were all kind of Evie's cohort in many ways, but they were never going to be an Evie. But they've now found careers with an enduro. So mountain biking is such a diverse thing. It doesn't have to be just this one
So discipline. Ella Connolly, have you just brought on the whole...
I haven't. I've just...
It's just I've all been, of them.
I was involved with British Cycling as their technical coach for a while. So I got that kind of group. I was involved with so many of them doing skill sessions with Evie and Ella for over a couple of winters, like doing stuff for British Cycling for them. And Ella was perfect example of she'd never really made the cut for cross country. But I was like, why don't you have a go at this enduro thing? And again, she's done more than I ever expected as well. So it's like just where she's taking it on from there.
She had a third, right? Am I right?
She had a couple of podiums now.
BWS. Not easy to do.
No. And I, from literally, really literally no experience of riding cross-country World Cups a couple of years before.
Yeah.
And for me, the coolest thing is to see how unhappy she was racing cross-country and not enjoying it, to then seeing the fun and the lifestyle and the success she's having now. It's like, awesome. Like, it doesn't have to be just this one channel. That if you fail at that, there's always other avenues. And I think that's probably been one of the things I've really tried to, you know, keep it fun and put a bit of reality onto the world of professional sport, that it's...
So what's the hard bit, like you said, with like Evie being quite open about, you know, the difficult sides of being a professional rider, and, you know, it's not easy becoming world champion in anything.
Oh, definitely.
So what, how does that happen? Why is that? Why would like someone who's being essentially being looked after, is it that they're being pointed down a too narrow a lane and it's all about results and then the pressure comes? And
I think in many ways it's the pressure that is externally put around you. So as soon as you start doing well, you get more help, you get team involvement possibly, so then you feel that pressure from those people. You've got other, you know, from a British Cycling perspective, you've got nutritionists, psychologists, all these people, and suddenly you're like, whoa, it adds pressure. And it's also the pressure from within. And I think in many ways now, I kind of look back and think I'm actually really quite glad and fortunate that I had a career when I did, before the powers of social media and all those other influences that come around. And we're now constantly being fed information from what our competitors are doing and people that are winning races and what they look like and what they're eating and what we should be doing. It's constant. Whereas
I think it would be hard now, looking back, because obviously the social media thing was not part of my career either. But looking back now, I would have seen that as something I don't think that would have been good for me. I'd have used it as like warfare.
Yeah.
The psychological.
Yeah.
I'd have been like, how can I go to the next event and have dented their confidence through this new weapon I've got, which is awful.
Yeah, and I'm
but
sure
I would have done it. I would have done it.
And it's hard to probably not make to not look at your competitors and see their training, look how lean they look and think, oh, well, they must be going fast because this is... And go down that rabbit hole of thoughts.
Nightmare.
So
what
I think there's
nightmare.
So much of that. And there's also the own personality. And Evie, for one, is such a fierce competitor that she will do anything. It's like win at all costs kind of thing. So if she thinks that, you know, eating less, becoming lighter is going to be her answer,
She will go down
that pathway to the nth degree until she makes herself ill, which she does. And it's like, there's so many factors to like the pressures of sport. And then that expectation that, you know, not everyone's ever going to make that world championship status. You could spend your whole career and never quite get there.
Mm.
And it's dealing with those highs, lows, and how you then bounce back from them and how you learn from it all and don't just end up in a negative spiral of like, life's not working out and it's tough then to make it work. So
I feel like if looking back into like my own career or lots of people I know from racing, like having nutritionists and that would not have helped me.
That would have made
my life very confusing.
Too much information and knowledge in many ways. Because if I look back now, I mean, I look at training, I look what the athletes I'm working with now and the training that they do, and you just think, I don't think I really trained until the last, I could say honestly say until my last 3 years of EWS, I never trained.
I never got fit until I was about 35.
Yeah.
And then I had to.
Yeah.
Because if I wanted to carry on,
yep.
I was like, oh, right, okay, I need to. Yeah. And I had not really done it properly until then. Which is nuts.
It's so different now when you think, you know, age 15, they're getting all this incredible knowledge, which is great. But does it take away from the rawness of just going out having fun on your bikes and sessioning and digging, and it's like, no, I've got to train, I've got to hit this FTP or whatever the all. I mean, that's again, it's not my world. I do ride for fun, and it's like I push on if I feel good. If I don't, then that's, I mean,
what's the thing you've got to avoid? What's the one thing that, like, so if fun's the most important thing, like, make sure you're having fun. What's the one thing you shouldn't do? What's going to stop you improving? And maybe and we're not talking like making world champs here. What about like just everyday rider? What should someone do? To improve, they should have fun, variety. But what shouldn't they do? Is there a thing you should not do?
I don't know. I think maybe just like get into such a kind of routine in a hole that you just do the same thing day in, day out, that you like, you don't ever see that success as well. If you go to the same trail and you ride the same trail, are you ever going to see progress or are you going to go faster? I think it's really important that you ride with different people. You don't always ride with the same group. You ride different places, so you keep that freshness and that fun.
Yeah.
Whereas often it's hard to see progress if you just do the same thing. You don't ever see
Which is
that
weird,
change.
Isn't it? Because the one thing you want to do to get fit is create a routine, but the one thing you don't want your riding to do is become
just
a routine.
And get stale with it in a way. Yeah, like just keep injecting something different and interesting, and I think and adding people to ride with it can be tough, I think, if you always ride on your own.
Yeah.
Or if you always ride indoors on Zwift or whatever, you know.
It's
mixing it up, making sure that you don't forget that bikes are meant to be for outside and get
Zwift? Do you Zwift? Do you Zwift?
I've done it.
What's it like? I've never done it. Is it good?
It's not for me.
No.
It serves a purpose when the weather's not great. But it's just I need to be outside.
You know, they do an off road one now where you have to steer. It's pretty cool.
Remember back in the day, they had that trickster thing that was like, you could almost like bend and pedal.
Yeah.
I need a bit of fresh air and some wind in my ears to make me feel like I'm alive rather than just sweating in a pile.
A lot of it is about getting out there, isn't it?
For
getting
me, out it's, in it. Some people I know that train entirely indoors and the only time they go out is racing at the weekend. And I'm just like, I couldn't do it, but it works for them.
Where's the best place for you to go out there and ride? Where's your favourite spot to ride? Like globally, you've ridden everywhere. You've ridden every track. You've probably ridden every track.
No, I definitely haven't. The world's a big place. Big place.
It's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what I mean is...
Look at it. There's the world.
Look at it. That's exactly it. That's our Cork world.
It's so tricky to choose. I love the Swiss Alps. I just love that big mountain feel, natural alpine single track. I'm a bit old school in terms of like bike parks are fun. Don't get me wrong, they serve a purpose and they're amazing to get multiple laps out in a day. But I do still love that wilderness, that being out there, not with every other man and his dog.
Right.
Solitary creature in some ways. So I do enjoy the mountain environment massively. But equally, I love coming home and riding on my little Malvern Hills. There's something about coming home and riding your local trails that is...
Is there a Malvern Hill?
Is it?
Or is there Malvern Hills?
They're 7 or 8 miles long.
Yeah. I sort of I drive past it, but I don't ever remember going to Malvern's the event and feeling like I was on a hill.
Well, you were on the slopes on the backside of the British camp. There'd have been an obelisk at the top of where the dual descendery thing would have been if you ever got to the top of there, but you never would have got that high up, I doubt.
I would have been more down in the bottom having a
like
maybe
a
little drink and riding over a car or something, you know. The hill, that if there
you
was...
You are kind of hidden, actually, from there. You can't really see the range of
hills. Yeah, I don't think... When I think back, I don't think, God, massive mountains and hills there.
But do you know what? There's a reason why Liam Killeen, Evie Hattie, myself, not that I was been renowned for my climbing skills, but it's they're only 200 metres at the height, but they are savage little buggers for up and down, up and down. And for training rides, you can...
Is that why Evie's so powerful?
Yes. 100%. She lives on the side of the Malvern Hills and she does hours on there. And it is just, you know, 5 minutes ups and 30 seconds down. Like, it's just...
Who's best, Hattie or Evie?
In terms of what?
I don't know. Just you've just got to say who you think's best.
They're so different in their skill set.
This is recorded.
That you couldn't compare them.
You've got to say
so
now,
different.
Tracy. You've got to say who you think's best.
You've got to give me a parameter at something. You can't just...
No, I mean, generally.
They're the best at...
Well, you've got to generalise who's best.
At what?
How do I get an answer out of you?
They're too different to even like put in that same category, I think.
Well, climbing, it's got to be Evie.
Yep.
So who's best at descending at the moment?
Hattie.
It is Hattie.
Yeah. I mean, if you put them on a cross-country bike, on a cross-country course, I'd probably say that it'd be hard for Hattie to pull away from Evie much, because Evie's pretty bang on now on her XC bike. But if you went to more like an enduro-style stuff, Hattie'd be much happier going high speed and attacking stuff more aggressively. And
it seems unfair to compare the two, but you're this common denominator, and I can't help myself. So,
just for Malvern.
What's more important to you in your career, your EWS wins? I don't know if you could look at it like this: your EWS wins or your downhill wins? Because your EWS wins are massive for the sport itself. Because it was, you know, just a prominent story at a very early point in its career, let alone yours. And then there's downhill. It's downhill. It's the Formula One. And it is.
It's tough because...
So now I'm making you compete with those two now.
So from a nostalgic...
Excuse this noise a minute.
Oh,
sorry.
Gin and tonic opening. Nostalgic, like, put on a pedestal, rainbow jersey, hang on your wall style... success than downhill world championships. To stand on the podium, to have national anthem playing, pull on a rainbow jersey, amazing. Life will never be, you know, you'll never get that again. From a personal standpoint of like my own real feeling of achievement, hard work prevailing, loads of, you know, being able to win EWSs over the course of a season, not just a one day race, you know, having that consistency, not having those mistakes, being able to perform over multiple days, and 3 years in a row, that ticks the box for me in terms of my own personal achievement and where I was at with my own training, my preparation, my everything I did. I put everything into those few years. And I feel like I was, that discipline really suited me as well. It was the most fun I've ever had. It was the biggest accomplishment. And I absolutely loved the fact that we got to ride such a variety of terrain. On downhill was amazing because it's that 100% all out on one run. But it's boring. In the sense that you go to the same location.
Boring?
Over the course of Fort William, how much has that course changed? I mean, it's not boring in that moment. Oh my goodness.
I've never actually... There is a video that makes it look like I've ridden down it, but I've actually never ridden
you
down
have.
It. You have. I've ridden down most of it.
But I'm saying it's been the same for so long. And you go back to even a Maribor or a Leger. I mean, the courses don't change hugely. And it's the most exhilarating thing ever, don't get me wrong, racing it. But it is that we're going to the same venue, we're going to ride this one track. Whereas EWS was like, you go in new places. We went to Chile, we rode down in volcanic, like dusty sand. Like the experiences and the difference in terrain and the differences that you got from a physical achievement as well, of massive days out on the bike, places you got to see, the chats you had on your 5 hours out in the day. Like there's just a bit more of a richness around what that gave me as a... Maybe I was older as well. I loved it, and I think that format for me was what I was... meant to do. Downhill was awesome, but I felt like I was always struggling to give my best on that one race run because I wasn't prepared. I'm not an absolute nutter. I don't want to just like risk all. Mm. Whereas enduro, you always row within your limits because you never, some of it was racing blind. You couldn't just go 100% around the corner in case it went left and you thought it went right.
Yeah, right.
It was a little bit of that. Yeah. But I liked that on the edge kind of instinctualness of it.
Yeah.
So they're very different, and I couldn't have done one without the other. Like, I could never have had the skills for enduro without those years of racing downhill.
Yeah.
But then the work I did to get fit enough to race EWS at that level was the bit I'm probably most proud of, because I was never a particularly fit downhill rider or hated pedaling, and I never was wanting to climb. And I grafted pretty hard to get to the point where I was probably the fittest one out there, and winning EWS is because of that fitness.
That's amazing. And it's quite a shift. On the downhill racing, because it's interesting what you're saying, that you're not a nutter. I mean, you must be a bit of a nutter because it's downhill.
But not full on.
Is that a huge advantage to racing downhill, to be able to look at it like that? To just be able to sit at the top of a downhill and think, I'm not about to kill myself. I'm not going to let myself kill myself. Because the pressure at the top of a downhill race is where it's won and lost a lot of the time.
It's like, who can handle it? But do you not think watching... I mean, I only watch it now from a track side occasionally when I went the races with the team, but as a spectator now more than anything, I haven't been on a downhill bike for years and haven't been like at that speed for a long time. The speed and the way the guys are riding, even the girls as well, to be honest, it's impressive. It's gnarly, the speed that they're going. And it's like, you can't just hit some of those lines and go for it if you're like, oh, I might just take it easy today.
You've got to
blooming go. Yeah. And I feel like the guys are like literally just turned off and be like, this is it. And maybe it's just because they're so focused and they're so strong, they know their lines, that it is very calculated and controlled. But part of it makes me think that there is that limit of just being able to just edge up a bit extra for race run, and let's just see if we get away with it.
I guess what I'm thinking about is, I just sort of, I remember talking to Rachel once, and she was talking about how she felt at the top of a particular race. It just happened, and it sounded awful. Like, she, when she described what she was going through,
the fear or the scare,
she literally was like, I don't want to know what's going to happen next, but I've got to do it. She didn't want to do it, and it sounded dreadful.
But then I think, look at Rachel's career and like those back-to-back wins that she had for years, in many ways.
It felt like years at one point,
every race, that pressure is going to mount up more and more and more. Like, that's a different level, I think, when you dominate something so much that the expectation that you put on yourself, let alone the rest of the world watching.
Yeah, right.
I think that's a different level entirely, and I can't imagine what that probably felt like.
Yeah.
And I do think, I've always said that if you're not scared, then you need fear. You need fear to be able to bring out the best in you, and also to have some control of risk as well in some ways.
Yeah.
Like, if you could have no fear whatsoever, then you are going to hurt yourself because you're just going to, you know, hit that gap with half the speed you need. Like, you need
you
need to a little bit of what's going on.
You need to mean it.
Yeah.
You need to mean it.
So I think it's that's why downhill's cool, hey, because there's such a mental game and there's such a skill level.
I mean, I was watching some of the races last year and just thinking, well, like you said, some of the lines can't be done unless you're committed to such a level that
you're going to go from there to there and miss everything in between.
It doesn't happen unless you're everything. And some of the... I always think watching downhill and EWS, say someone like goes over the finish line and they were... You say it was even half a second faster than someone else. You can watch that rider going down and see it.
Mm.
Even though it's only going to equal half a second at the bottom, you can see they're going quicker.
Yeah.
And I think that's really weird because it must be such tiny things.
But then half a second in terms of distance is at the speed they're going. It's quite a chunk.
Yeah. It's really weird. Like, you know when you're watching like the final runs, you're like, oh, he's flying.
Yeah.
Well, she's absolutely nailing it. And you're like, oh, you can sort of see it, but it must be so tiny, the amount.
The thing with, I found the crazy downhill, definitely, but that's like a shorter race run. But when you've, some of the EWSs the last couple of years, when it was like Jack Moore and Richie were within seconds.
It's crazy. Yeah, literally, event for event, it was first, second, first, second.
And seconds first, over, 40-odd minutes of racing or something.
I remember Steve Pete saying once, if you could give him something like 3 seconds, he could have 2 more World Cups and a World Championship. If he could sprinkle them where he wanted.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. 3 seconds. Yeah. I can't remember if it was 3 seconds, but it was a tiny amount of time.
Yeah, that's like, when you realise how
that's all it was.
How well matched everyone is at that level. It is just one breaking a bit later in one corner or one less of a rock to slow you up or something. It's the tiniest thing.
That could keep you up at night. Yeah. That really could keep you up at night. Is there something, I don't know if you'll be able to answer this, is there something in cycling or in mountain biking that needs to happen at the moment? Is there something that need? Is there a, from your standpoint as a rider, but now looking at it from how companies come into the sport or how companies manage the riders, is there something with your kind of, got a really good standpoint of like, what is there something the sport needs to do that it isn't doing?
I think, well, the thing that comes to mind is like,
it's a hard question.
The televisable nature. It's not the right word, is it?
Televisable a word?
I don't think so, but you know
if that's a word. Can we look that up? It's televisable a word.
How we broadcast the sport, maybe that way. And there's part of me as the mountain biker and the old school mountain biker that thinks, oh, I love the fact that our sport's still underground in some ways and it's not known by the world. I think that's what makes it quite special as well. But there's other part of me that says, you know, if we're ever going to compete on the same stage as, you know, the rugbys, the crickets, that let's say road cycling, for example, as well. It's not just other sports.
This is way better than road cycling, seriously.
Then how do we do that? And the only thing is revenue from TV and TV coverage and becoming mainstream. And part of me thinks, oh, God, that's going to be terrible for the sport. But it's also potentially what we need if the sport's going to ever become on a level playing field. And mountain biking still is not known by, I would say, a huge percentage of the population. If you were to just go into the street and, you know, name sports, it wouldn't be like a sports that we've got Olympic champions in, probably not going to name mountain biking.
No.
And that's one of the things that's always made me crazy in this country is that the French have dominated mountain biking for so many years, but if you ride your bike in France and you have a world champions jersey on, people would know what that is.
Yeah.
They would know what the sport is and they would almost want to stop and chat to you. You could do it in this country, people would be like, it's a weird white jersey. What the hell is it?
That's true, actually. No one would know what a world champion is.
And it's so sad because we are now probably, you know, maybe historically we're not as successful as the French have been, but over a short period of time, over the last, let's say, 15 years, we've dominated downhill for quite a few of those years. EWS, we've certainly battled a little bit with the French. Hattie's now won another one that I did. So, you know, we are winning. And Olympic Games, we've got an Olympic champion. We've got a world champion now. Like, that is incredible for mountain biking. And
To have people riding at a level in cross country from the UK, it's
unheard of until now.
Can you imagine that? Back in the day, someone saying, oh,
it was Carol Alexander, wasn't it?
And that was it.
Tim Gould did pretty good. There was
Gould had some really great results. Dave Baker had some. Yeah. But they were like massive icons in our sport. But they'd never achieved Pidcock and Evie Richards.
I would love to be able to feel like, you know, the people and the sport could benefit from the revenue that television brings to our sport. But how do we do that? How do we televise the sport like enduro that realistically is off in the backcountry in the woods having fun all day?
I mean, that's one thing we can work on.
But yeah, that's,
don't worry.
For me, that would certainly for enduro, I feel like it would elevate enduro because I still feel like enduro is sitting as that like third cousin, but you know, cross country's been showcased, it's easier to showcase because it's multiple laps. Downhill's easy because it's one course, certain cameras. And what's happened up till now, the coverage has been great, it's definitely brought the sport forward. But enduro's still like not got that same, I would say, same feel, it's not the same following. The riders don't feel have the same fan base. And
it's a harder thing to follow, harder to follow, but.
And what bikes do people go and buy? They buy enduro bikes. What riding do they do? They ride enduro. They go to the forest, race their mates down the hills, cruise up the climbs, race their mates down the stages. That's what people do, and that's what mountain biking is for the majority of people. They're not going to ever do an Evie Richards, smash yourself around for an hour and a half.
Most people got on a downhill bike, they'd be like, what the hell is this thing? Until you get it on a hill, it's pointless.
And you've got to go somewhere that's
pointless.
Got a lift or whatever. It's not accessible. Whereas enduro is what we all aspire to do on our bikes. So it would be awesome for that sport to be given that stage to be able to show that. So
I hope you guys can do that.
That would be awesome.
Luckily, it's not us in this room that will do it. So it's all in good hands. If it was actually in my hands, we'd be in trouble. What about the sort of other side of mountain bike? Because that's one thing I think about mountain biking is it's almost got too many strings to its bow. Strings to its bow? Is that the saying?
I think that is a saying, yeah.
Or is it a strings to a guitar? It feels like I should say strings to a guitar.
No, strings to a bow. bow,
but a
tie.
Bow would just, a bow would just have one two. String, wouldn't it?
Because you tie it and there's two coming down.
That's not important. It's got, so there's, you know, there's cross country, there's downhill, there's EWS, there's, sorry to mention it, trials. But I love it. But it's a form of mountain biking.
There's a bit of four cross
there's
in there,
four
maybe.
Four cross a little bit. Still you won a few of those.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and there's...
e-bike now.
E-bike racing. I mean, there's almost... Wow, and the bit I was getting to, massive part of it, free riding.
Mm.
Like dirt jump riders, free riders. And now we've got, you know, really... I think this is cool news about the FMB tour, like really putting in some effort to make sure there's some women represented at these races.
Yeah.
And some of them, I think the Red Bull one's got like equal pay, which is, how do you, I don't know how to view this because obviously not being a woman, how do you view that? Like, how important is finding out there's equal pay for women in a mountain bike race?
Oh, it's massive because it's been such a... You know, historically, the sport, there's never been as many women taking part as men. And I don't think we're probably ever going to change that in the recent or the upcoming time. I hope it will, in long term, but I can't see it happening short term because there's just not the same amount of women that are prepared to... There's probably 50% women riding now at bike parks you can go. It's a massive number of women. Yeah, yeah. And slowly they're going to get to racing. But at that high level, that's going to take a long time to get there. Mm. So it's always been tough, I think, to kind of argue this case if we should have equal prize money when the field size is hugely different. Mm. And maybe the following of the sport is such a male-dominated sport. But we are 50% equal in terms of men and women on the planet. The girls out there are... putting in the same effort in terms of training, risk-taking, pushing the boundaries, which we've seen now with the girls with the free ride. It's been awesome. And it's almost like they've had to do that themselves to push that. It's not been like the industry's not been saying, please come and race. They've had to say, we want to do this. Please take it seriously.
Yeah. So I want to send a front flip.
Exactly. So they've had to like almost work harder just to be noticed, to be seen and to be respected. And I also think the cost of living... is the same for both sexes. Like, if you actually want to make a career out of it, like, we have to pay the same bills. We're doing the same stuff. Like, how does it not become fair when you don't earn the same money out of it?
Mm.
It just seems crazy. But
is that something you've kind of been faced, you've had to sort of face all the way through your riding? Or?
Oh, for sure. And I think in some ways, I've been one of those people that's almost just been accepted of it. And I have very much been like, you know, I love what I do. How much of a fuss do you want to make about certain things? It's like now, I think we're bringing up a child. It's like you pick your battles in terms of when you want to have a drama about something and when you want to just give in. And I think the whole, you know, equal prize money, trying to drive the female side of the sport is something that I've probably been a little bit sometimes just not voiced my opinion enough. And I've just been like, I just want to get on with it. I want to ride my bike. I enjoy what I'm doing. I'm being successful. I'm being respected. And I feel like I've got a good relationship with my sponsors, but I haven't probably been in the past had a strong enough will or had that real drive or passion to be like, this isn't fair. I deserve the same as Steve Pete, or I deserve the same as whoever is my male compatriot at the time,
because
I know damn well that was never paid on an equal playing field for my entire career.
I don't think anyone got paid as much as Steve Pete.
But not just him, but it's cool now to see a few of the girls that are, and I think whether it's true or not, Tanya will correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a rumour that she really went to Fox and said, hey, I want to be paid the same as a Loris or a whoever else those guys on that playing field were. And and respect to them. I feel like I've shied away maybe from that kind of, I'm not great at conflict or, you know, wanting to have those awkward discussions. And I'm really grateful there's girls out there now that are bringing it forward and pushing it. And I think stuff like this with the Freeride World Tour is awesome because, you know, we've always seen that women have never done the gnarliest things, or compared to the guys, it's always been that like lower tier, but they're pushing the level now. And I think it's, what's it going to be like then when you've not had girls to aspire to at that, so you've not got young kids watching freeride and seeing other girls doing it, so they're probably not going to then think, oh, I want to go and do that. Whereas if now they see it, that's where it starts at, you know, age 8, 9, 10. Who used to say in 10, 20 years time we're going to have more? And that's the only thing you can hope for.
I mean, if you see it, it's that thing, isn't it? If you see it, you can picture it, it can happen. You know, it's like one of those. I think in women's football, I remember 10 years ago was like rubbish. It was rubbish. Yeah. I don't mean it was rubbish football. It was rubbish. You know, it was just But just once things have got a way to get out there and show themselves, it just grows so quick. And now on a Saturday, you turn on Match of the Day and there's women's football on there and it's totally normal.
But it's the same thing. Like, they were trying to play football and still have a full-time job because they weren't getting paid.
Yeah.
How can you expect the women's game to be as exciting as the men's when they're not training full-time?
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing. How do you expect someone to put the effort into training if they're trying to hold down a job to also pay their bills whilst trying to be a professional mountain biker?
Yeah.
It's like, unless that level playing field is there, you can't expect that skill gap or that, you know, ability gap to ever decrease. And I'm not saying it ever will be the same, because we are men and women, we're a very different species,
physiques and skill
sets and skills, you know, but there definitely can be we can get to the level that women's racing can keep pushing and get to that level. And I think that's only going to happen now with, you know, the future of that opportunities for women to make a career out of it, to get paid, to earn money, and then, you know, be able to put back into
their
investment.
There's going to be some big stars from that, because it's going to be really, focused. You know, people are going to really notice it in this next year, and there's going to be some big stars just arrive from
there. Oh, for sure, because
we're going
to
be
the first
people
to do
crazy
stuff.
Yeah.
And most guys will look at that and think, I would never do that. And
there's big moments to come from that. I'm quite excited about it. Have you ever done dirt jumps or anything like that?
Ed
must have got you through some dirt
jumps. Yeah, I did
loads
of dirt jumping when I started racing downhill again, because there was no effort required. You could just push your bike up to the top
and roll through.
Just get through.
It's nothing better than getting through a set, is there?
I absolutely loved it. And it's, something I was never amazing at, and it always scared me a bit, but I really did enjoy doing the dirt jumping back in the day. There was loads of locally.
Did you any throw any tricks? Were you like,
never. Get boring again. Just jump there to there. No going sideways, unless the wind caught me.
No big tables.
Would love to.
What would you call it, Toff, if you like really... What's a clicked?
Table.
Really clicked.
Can I do a question?
Yeah.
From the floor.
This is Toff.
Yeah.
He's nuts.
Oh, yeah. He's got me water, thank you.
He's nuts, right? Mm-hmm. Before he asks the question, I'm just going to warn you. He's nuts.
I've got
some steez.
One, when you were saying about how, the size of mountain biking and how it's sort of capped at the moment... So it's like in its own little weird ecosystem. I remember once I went to your house with Katie Cudd, and I remember seeing you, and there's all these mountain bikers, same as mine. Like, you look, as someone who is a mountain biker, you look up to these other mountain bikers, people like Semenuk, who are like super rock stars in mountain biking. But then when they go to the supermarket, like, no one has a clue who they are. Is that what you want to see change when it all goes on to telly?
No, that's the bit that scares me.
Oh, that's the bit.
That's the bit that's like, I quite love the fact that I can walk around my local town and no one has a clue who I am.
When you were the most superstar you've ever been, did no one know who you
were? No, no way. Nothing. And that was amazing, and I like that, and I don't want to be a superstar. I have no desire to be recognised in the street. Kind of weird. And that would happen. That's the thing that I fear that it would change the sport, and I think it would change the people and the culture and this lovely cliquey ecosystem, like you said, of what the sport is. So that's why I've got this a bit of a divide as to what is right and what's the best thing.
It's a lot of I tell you what I've had, because of back in the day with MBUK and that, I've been in literally a WH Smith's where someone's buying an MBUK and they sort of would, you know, you were that close to it, they did recognise you.
And you get
a few people, and back then you used to do autographs and things. And I can't imagine what it would say, but you can literally leave the WH Smiths and no one knows who you
exactly.
are. So it's like a pretend version of it.
Yeah.
And I always think what it must be like to be someone who's recognised in every shop you go in.
For me, it'd be horrendous. Some people might love it, but...
It would be unbelievably jarring to just think every person who looks at you goes, that's... Yeah. It actually makes me think, have you ever thought how weird it would be to be the Queen? Every room she goes into, everybody goes, that's the Queen. So that energy is in every single room she ever enters. Can you imagine that?
Someone opens the door for you everywhere you go.
And then everyone here goes, takes a breath in. She must be like, chill out.
Just kick back on the sofa and put your feet up.
Will you lot relax?
Yeah.
I was in that. It must be a nightmare. I've got something I really want to ask you about. That crash in Slovenia. Talk us through that massive crash.
Were you there
crash.
Or just you seen it?
I don't know if I think I might have been there. I think I might have been there because you'd have been on a Cannondale.
Yeah, it was featured on the old Sprung video or something, was it?
Yeah, I can picture it in my head, so I think I've seen it on a video.
Yeah.
But I think I did see you at the bottom of the hill after it, where it looked like someone had just gone whack! Knocked you out.
Well, I think this is where, so I like dirt jumping, but I wouldn't say jumping was ever my forte. I always struggled with it a little bit. And these jumps were probably like maybe a foot high. It wasn't, they weren't very big.
But they were fast.
But they were crazy fast. And they were the days where they were pretty badly made, that it was probably like a little molehill, a gap, and then a little molehill to land.
Yeah.
So it was like spits you up, kicks you. And then if you didn't quite make the landing or you overshot it, then you were like, rah.
And so was that the crest? What happened? In my head, you're going really fast.
And then just, I got bucked.
It's a buck.
Yeah, it was a massive buck. So whether it was my suspension... could blame my bike, couldn't I? So suspension blew.
You could blame the bike.
It's probably just my terrible technique. Whatever happened, I ended up just getting bucked and ejected and front wheel, maybe rolled the front wheel again. What do you think? I hit my head. So
yeah.
I wouldn't say memory's that good. I probably remember watching a video. But it was the speed and just ragdolled down that hill for quite some time.
Was it in the race itself?
No, I don't think so, because I ended up missing the race, and I think I flew home quite quickly. And that was probably the first time. I must have been at university. I remember having exams to do, and I remember thinking, oh, what am I doing? And flying home quite quickly. And, you know, you talk about concussion now, it's such a huge topic in the sport. There's so much knowledge now, there's so much testing, procedure, you know. There was nothing back then. And people now ask me if you had any really bad concussions. And I don't have memories of like really having concussions to the point where I'd seen athletes now, but I must have done at that point, because that was a pretty big hit to the head.
And that was a big one.
Remember going home and not feeling great for a while, being pretty sore, but nothing broken, and thankfully I was young and flexible. But
yeah,
that was high speed with.
And so you didn't race because it just made you feel like
I must
smashed
have. Yeah, I must. So I can't remember, to be honest, but. I remember someone...
Which makes me think you probably were concussed.
Yeah. It was a while ago, too.
It is crazy how that's viewed now, though, isn't it?
What's that?
It's crazy how that is viewed now. That's a different...
But I'm so pleased, too, because you only have to look at... You know, there's a few incidents of people that I know that are suffering from concussion from bike-related crashes or from multiple crashes. And... back then, when I look at it, we just brushed it off. It was like, you got a headache, oh, what's wrong with you? Take a few powers to get back on your bike. And it's like, wow, if that's then going to impact your life and your potential for dementia in your old age and the impact it has, it's like, the bike racing thing's cool, but it's a pretty short time in your life where you're doing that. Like, your brain and your body's going to have to see you through the rest of your life. Like, let's look after it.
Yeah.
So I'm all for, you know, being as sensible and smart about it as we can, and taking off. I think it's really hard, because as an athlete, you want to perform, you want to be at the race, you want to be at the start line. It's a really hard call to say, hey, I don't want to race, I don't feel like I should. And I think back then you would have
been... Are racers really going to say that, though?
Oh, I think they almost would now.
Do you think?
I think it's accepted now to say that someone's having time out, and also now sometimes it's forced by teams, team managers. And we use with the Trek, we use HeadCheck with a company in the US that has a software program. So the athletes are getting checked, and unless they can have a doctor's note to return to sport, they can't return. And you look at what football and rugby, those guys, the protocols for that is immense. And it's more socially acceptable it's not an excuse. It's something pretty serious.
So what would happen? Say a rider, but like they bump their head in a race and you sort of suspect there's concussion, but say they you know, how would you like judge whether they should race on, or have you just got to go on their word?
No, so we've got like at the start of every season, we do like a baseline check of tests. So it's like there'll be word recognition, numbers, balance, walking along, like a whole bunch of different things that can assess.
Like a basic test.
Baseline test, basically.
Yeah.
And then you then do tests after a crash, and you can then see how far they deviate from what that was. And there's a certain point where you can then say, we detect a concussion, because you know, the values are way out. Like, they can't remember their name, they can't do this. You know, you can actually record it, and there's data there to show it.
Right.
And if there's ever even suspicion of it, then it's like you get medical knowledge input, and you take them out of competition. And then there's now really, really well thought out return to sport kind of parameters, and it's a certain time, they have to achieve certain things. I mean, I think mountain biking is still a long way off the likes of rugby and football and stuff, but we're getting there, and I think it's really important, because it doesn't even have to sometimes be a crash. It can be those ridiculous, like, slowing down forces. I mean, there are people that have had the sensation of concussion, but not from actually physically hitting the ground. It's that rotation and that.
I've definitely had the physical experience of hitting a tree and just stopping dead. We've all done that, haven't we? Like, is the Slovenia crash your worst crash, or can you think of another one? Have you had any real big?
Probably high speedness. I think, I mean, those early years of me racing downhill when I was like 17, 18, I was crashing all the time. Like, that was how you learnt in some ways. And I look back now and I think it's crazy what I used to do. But my worst one in terms of injury was dislocating my shoulder. But that was, again, the most often it's not those impressive high speed looking ones. Mm. It was literally catching my handlebar in a wiry bush on a Spanish track and like just over and just fell on it. So it's like, or catching a pedal. I've had some nasty ones where I just caught a pedal in a little stick or something. They're always dry places where there's little really tough, wiry, spiky bushes that just get you.
Grab you and pull you off.
They're mostly the awkward ones, like the slow speed things where you just fall like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah.
But in general, I think, again, I'm that boring, dull, not wild character. I've not ever...
It's funny you view yourself as dull and boring.
But I have massive crashes because I don't take crazy risks. I'm quite calculated in everything. Do you know what I mean?
I sort of do, because I know you, But I can sort of think how weird that must sound to someone who doesn't know you. It's like, to an extent you have to be. You like defined through your results as you must have been quite rad.
It took a few skids.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, but I wonder if that's one of your strengths, to be like, able to look at yourself in a controlled way.
I think to still be involved in the sport 20 plus years later, to still have not, touch wood, not got any metal in me. Mm. You know, like I've had very few really, really serious injuries. Like, it's pretty rare, I think, now when you look at the sport. Mm. And I think a lot of that is because I've been pretty sensible in some ways in that risk taking in many ways.
Sensibly crazy.
Sensibly crazy, yeah. James would say just like a bit of a control freak with stuff, which I guess, and that's...
And that's another strength as well, being like a control freak. Well, I think we can end it on sensibly crazy.
Sounds good.
Thanks very much.
No worries. Good to see you.